1, 2, 3, not only you and me, got 180 degrees, and I'm caught in between, counting 1, 2, 3.
Hello, my name is Tom Chick. You're listening to a very special Order to Three movie podcast. Tom Chick, that's me. The Oscar nominees were announced, and since we're movie geeks, we're movie wonks, movie dorks, movie nerds, we...
Since every straight dude cares about the Oscars.
Now, Kelly Wand, you are the voice of, not caring about the Oscars, I understand. So you are going to be...
That was the laziest musical opening choice I've ever heard of out of you.
Why, that's our best song.
Yeah. What's that got to do with the Oscars?
There's three of us.
Yeah, and he did that for our other special show too, though.
So that was Kelly Wand, and that just
I get it because the Oscars are gay.
Was Christian
Spears is a girl? I get it.
Mukasey.
I'm just gonna stick with Jetbird because that worked last week. I want to be Jetbird.
Captain Jetbird. All right. What movie is that from, Dingus?
Hold on. Wait. I can't even remember now.
Jersey Scott.
We've got some Academy Award nominees. What we want to do, one of us does not care about the Academy Awards.
You didn't
one
introduce
of us,
me. I had a catchphrase.
Oh, Kelly Wand, what is your Oscar nominee catchphrase?
It's 1/5 the honor to be nominated, and in some cases, 1/10.
Very good. So let's just go down the categories and let's kvetch a little bit about who did and did not get nominated. I don't know about you, Dingus and Kelly, but I have, let's pretend that we are each an academy of one. Who would we give the award to? We would just skip nominees. We'll go through the nominees, but then I'd like us to pick to whom we would give the award if it was up to us.
I think the Oscars are stupid, so can I resign from my own academy?
You can. You can absolutely disband your academy and dissolve it, and absolutely.
But I still have to be here and do this.
You do? That's
even though I think the Oscars are stupid.
I think they're stupid as well. I'm not an Oscar fan. The sole Oscar fan who unironically enjoys it is Dingus.
Yeah,
but he's
married. I have space in my life for but one awards show, and this is it. And I'm going to take issue with you right away, Tom. I'm going to have... other people that I thought should have been nominated in addition to the people I think should win.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that, but we mainly want to hear who you would give the award to. We're going to cut to the chase. We're not going to wait and do a show when the winners come out, because who cares about that? We want to appoint a winner for each award while we're here this evening.
So it's not who we think's going to win. It's who
we don't care. I don't care. Do you care? Do you got money?
Why are we doing this? Usually, isn't there an Oscar pool?
Oh, I'm not part of one of those. I have
you never
no
gone to an Oscar party.
You know what? Dingus tries to run one of these every year, and I get invited, and I forget about it. The Oscars tend to broadcast, and because I don't have TV,
yes, you won't come. Oh, you don't have TV.
I don't have TV. It's like I'll just be hanging around, going about my life, and then hey, the
that's why
to the
you're
showing
the podcast because you don't have TV. So
right,
you're super
exactly. It's not like I'm missing Lost or anything right now. All right, so let's start us off, Kelly. Give us a category and tell us who is nominated. Go.
Best short film live action. Got to keep people listening.
I choose Joe Bird.
The Door. You want me to read all the foreign names?
I really think we should skip these I think some of these can be skipped.
These are the good categories. These are the
okay,
artistic
fine.
Categories.
Go ahead.
There's a Nick Park one nominated for animated. Which means we have to read all 10. Live action short film, The Door, Juanita Wilson and James Flynn. Okay. Instead of Abracadabra, Patrick Eklund and Matthias Fjellstrom. Maybe we should skip these, actually. This is taking forever.
All right, pick another category for us. What do you got that's interesting?
Sound editing.
I actually have an opinion on this one. So there's two sound ones, aren't there? There's sound editing and
sound mixing. Yeah.
Now, what's the difference, Kelly Wand?
Sound editing is where you edit what you've just mixed. Second. It's like winning an Oscar for best rewriting of screenplay.
Okay, well, I want to give a shout-out to a particular movie that wasn't like an Avatar or a District 9, because those are the things that tend to get nominated. But I don't know if I should... do it for sound mixing or sound editing. I'm gonna do it for sound mixing. So tell us who is nominated for sound mixing.
Wait, Avatar. First of all, are you going to go ahead and make an actual distinction between sound mixing and sound editing?
Me? I don't know. Yeah. I don't really have. I mean, one of them is mixing and one of them is editing.
All right.
Well, you went into that big tangent about it just now.
I thought somebody might have something informed to say on the matter.
Why would you think that?
I don't know. Dingus, do you know the difference?
Well, I certainly do.
The fact that they're not the same five movies is...
Okay, let's go over the nominees, and maybe from that, a guy like me can suss out what the difference is. Let's try it.
All right, then I won't say what I know. Let's just move on.
Then I say we do Best Picture, and then see if anyone listens after that. Let's do the opposite of the Oscars and lead with Best Picture. Huh? All right, sound mixing. Avatar, I'm not even going to read the names. You just have to do the movies, because no one cares.
That's fine.
Avatar, Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Star Trek, and, fifth choice, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, which is nominated for an Oscar.
Now the Academy Award nominated Transformers is the way we have to refer to it. What were the sound mixing nominees?
That was the sound mixing.
Ah, well, there you go. I'm already confused. What were the sound editing nominees?
Editing was Avatar, Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Star Trek, and Up.
What?
So Transformers had Oscar-winning sound mixing, but not Oscar-winning sound editing. Only knows how to edit sound.
I learned nothing from that, then. I'm as ignorant as I was when I pressed record.
We know Dingus is going to say Avatar for both these.
Right.
One of my favorite moments at the beginning of the in our early podcast was when one of you called Transformers 2 Fall of the Risen, I think.
That would have been probably Kelly Wand.
I didn't see that thing. Is that what it's called?
No, but that's what somebody labeled it, Transformers 2, Fall of the Risen.
So, Dingus, what is, explain it for us, sound mixing versus sound editing.
It's transforming vertically, so either way.
Okay.
That's great.
As I understand it, just in short, sound mixing is...
levels.
It's taking the sound you have and making the most euphonic sound.
Making different sounds.
Whereas sound editing is the creation of sound. So sound editing is the creating of sound. Sound
but
mixing.
Aren't you editing while you're mixing? Isn't that kind of editing too?
Well, I don't know the fine details, but just let me tell you that one of them is mixing the sound that you have, and the other is creating sound. So mixing.
Once going to war with the army you have.
Right, right. And a lot of this is there's a lot of known unknowns here. Mm. But sound mixing is taking the sound that you have and making the most euphonic design available, and sound editing is creating the most beautiful creation of sound in a film.
Huh. Okay, I think we're done with the sound topics. Moving on to visual effects.
Do we care at all about... So I wanted to mention a movie that got left out and doesn't tend to get nominated for this, which should be singled out for the sound, is a movie called The Messenger or The Messengers? The Messengers, because there's two of them.
Messenger.
It's just one of them because there's two characters. That's very confusing. Because I'm confusing it with the thing where the girl from Boys Don't... Hilary Swank plays like... someone in an apocalypse. That's a Messenger movie too, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's without the indefinite article, right?
Ah, just Messenger. Okay. Well, the one with Woody Harrelson and Ben Foster has an incredible sound mix where sound is a huge part of it. As these characters go through the world, there's constantly a radio playing or a TV or conversations in the background. And it's such the soundscape of this movie. It's a little independent movie. Is an amazing piece of work. So I think it's disappointing that stuff like Avatar gets singled out in little movies like The Messenger, where it's a huge, subtle part of the movie, get overlooked. So that's my first ding against the Academy tonight.
Well, is The Messenger foreign?
No. It's an American movie. It's about Woody Harrelson and Ben Foster as soldiers who notify families that a member of the family has been killed in Iraq or Afghanistan. Has been killed.
Are you saying The Messenger's a better and more Oscar-worthy movie than Transformers?
Certainly in terms of sound mixing and or editing. And I'm still even not clear which The Messenger's should be, which category it should fall under. Because that obviously can't have been ambient sound when they were recording. They created a soundscape with all the TV noise and stuff in the background and then put it in the movie. So that's... editing, yeah? Mixing. I don't know.
I would say it's sound mixing.
How come sound and, recording it doesn't get anything?
It is the messenger. For sound mixing, I would give it to Hurt Locker. I really like that sound design. Usually I'm really going to lean toward Coen Brothers sound designs. I tend to love their sound designs, but I really loved Hurt Locker. And for sound editing, and I know you guys are going to hate me for this, but I would have to go with Avatar because I think...
We're not going to hate you. We're just going to laugh at you.
Snicker, snicker. The sound creation in that is great.
All right. What do you got next for us, Kelly Wand? Give us another category.
Well, the Coen Brothers movie wasn't nominated for any sound Oscars.
Which it should have been. Dingus, you even singled it out. When we talked about A Serious Man, you singled out the sound design in that movie.
That is true.
So the Academy prefers the work of Michael Bay's team and the Coen Brothers team. Okay. Yep. We're all clear on that. Best visual effects, only three movies were nominated because only three effects movies came out last year. District 9, Star Trek... and Wolverine.
I like Kelly's choices.
Jeez, I'm going to be slugging uphill this entire podcast.
Gee, I wonder who's going to win it. Ching.
All right, ching. I don't really have an opinion because this is just, you know, I've said before that I think Avatar is creatively bankrupt. I hate seeing it nominated for, what is this, visual arts, visual design?
Visual effects.
Good lord, yeah. Whatever.
Every movie is an effects movie, but only three movies were nominated for this.
I think.
Well, I am actually interested. I know you just want to slag off on it, but I am interested in talking
slag
about
off.
The difference. Whatever
you want. Sounds dirty.
You want to grind on it. I am interested in talking about the difference between the visual effects idea that Avatar, that you can talk about the visual effects of Avatar, as opposed to talking about it as an animated film.
Oh, it did get nominated for animated film, I hope.
Well, why not? Why shouldn't it? And I've thought about this as far back as any of the Spider-Man films. I mean, this is just as much an animated film as any of the other animated films, and it's no less those films are no less real films than this one is. I mean, why shouldn't Fantastic Mr. Fox be nominated with the other films and Avatar be nominated with the animated films? And what makes visual effects different than animation? So while I think the visual effects are incredible in Avatar, I don't think it's any less an animated film than the other animated films.
I agree.
What?
With the part about it, not the part about it being incredible, but the part about it being as animated as the other films.
Well, I mean, it's essentially a cartoon, just
Thank
as
you.
The others are.
Thank you. And do you have, who would you single out, Dingus? Who would you, cause you know what, I wished I'd given this more thought because, as far as visual effects, I might even lean towards something like Watchmen even. No, not really. That's all production design. I don't know. Who would you pick for this one, Dingus? Who's your favorite?
Well, I really like the way that the visual effects are integrated in District 9. District 9 is the visual effects are such a part of the world. Although I was more wowed by the visual effects in Avatar, I like the way District 9 is all a part of a world, and it's our world, and yet it's still other. I really liked the visual effects in District 9.
Okay, good.
And doesn't it matter that it serves the story better in District 9 than in Avatar? Isn't that why it should win?
Not to
well,
the Academy.
I would,
as an Avatar, without the effects, the movie's nothing.
So you just completely discounted what you said.
No. I'm saying they are related, and to give something an award for visual effects without context is dumb, and that's another reason the Oscars are dumb. Like, the best visual effects that serve a story and make you – it's more immersive. 2D versus 3D is a whole can of worms. The whole thing's stupid. I don't know why we're here.
But if your contention is that the visual effects are the only thing that are worthwhile about the movie and the story is stupid, then you would have to say that the visual effects – although Tom doesn't agree, he thinks the movie's ugly. Whatever. That if your contention is the visual effects are strong but the story is weak, then you would have to say that it deserves something for visual effects, wouldn't you?
No, visual effects without context deserve recognition. You're saying?
Yeah. Why
yeah.
Not?
Yes. Thank you.
Why not? Because
as far as what Kelly is concerned.
Because what's the award? I had the most workloads. Is that what you're judging, or are you judging the overall effect of what the effects did for you aesthetically?
I'm judging
the story's part of it. I mean, the story, how that we. I mean, I don't know.
Dingus, we're actually kind of agreeing with you. I mean, you were saying that you would lean towards District 9 because of how well it fit into our world, and it gave it the film a sense of the other. The visual effects in District 9 were a very powerful part of the movie. The visual effects in Avatar, to Kelly and me, didn't have any of that anchoring. I mean, they didn't have any of that context that made them more meaningful. Now, I can't speak for the Academy. I don't know what's going on with those people, and I, in a way, don't care. They're a bunch of goofballs. But I personally, I would need, you know, I don't, even if I did like the production design, the visuals in Avatar, which I didn't care for, but even if I did like them, they would mean more to me with some kind of context like you were talking about with District 9. So personally would not recognize, even if I didn't think it was ugly, I would not recognize Avatar as an outstanding achievement in visual design. Because it doesn't have context. To me, the experience of being in a movie, everything should tie together. I even think of something like Sandra Bullock, we'll get to this, nominated for Blindside. Even if she's great in that, which maybe she is, I can't imagine Blindside is any good. The things that I picked were performances and scripts and whatnot that really fit with and honored the material. And I just, Avatar doesn't qualify for me personally on that level.
So that's actually a fascinating statement, because there have been a number of performances in particular over the years where people say that's a great performance, but the film is just so-so.
Yeah, yep.
And interest, that, for you, that doesn't have any place.
It's not what I would single out as deserving special recognition.
Okay.
And oddly enough, all of my acting choices weren't even nominated this year. So that's another reason.
Spoiler.
I think the Academy is dumb. So I think we mostly see eye to eye on that visual thing. So, okay, and we all like.
Well, yeah, I understand that. I mean, for you, if it's great visuals and there's nothing else, it might as well be a commercial. Which, when you guys keep saying we don't know what the Academy is doing, keep in mind a lot of this has to do with money.
No, I don't want to keep that in mind. It's terrible.
Well, no, here we are doing a podcast about a corporation.
I understand. No, you're right, Dingus. You're absolutely right. I know.
Okay. But we keep asking, why does this happen and why did that happen? A lot of it is the Oscars are about business.
Filthy lucre is how I prefer to refer to it.
Very good. Very
Which is why District 9 should win, Avatar will win, and Star Trek had the bad luck to come out the same year as Avatar.
All right, what's another one? What's the next category, Kelly Wand? What do you got?
Won that argument, or was it even an argument?
I think we resolved it, and we have achieved detente, and we're moving forward in the spirit of peace and brotherhood.
Mm. Oh, it's just like Star Trek.
So my pawn got captured, Doug. Oh. Best writing, adapted screenplay.
Okay,
so
now I'm...
I think writing's important, Oscar, and people who don't can fuck off.
I'm with you, Kelly Wand.
Writing is everything.
All three of us are writers. I mean, this matters to all of us. So what do you got? Who got nominated? And now break down. Didn't it used to be adapted screenplay and original screenplay?
It still is.
Oh, isn't there some weird, it's not that simple. Isn't there some weird term?
No, it is that simple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What are you thinking, Tom?
Let's see. On IMDb, they had it listed as, for Pete's sake, I can't believe I'm having to go on the dang internet.
Here we are listening to Tom on a podcast.
Best writing, screenplay based on material previously produced or published is how the category is.
That's just another way of saying adapted.
Well, I know, but I thought that's what I was asking.
They dumbed it down, I guess.
What do they technically call the award? It's not adapted and original anymore, it seems to me.
They don't say best even anymore, but they just say outstanding.
Well, this says, and again, I'm just looking at the way that IMDb posted it, so I'm assuming they drew it from something the Academy issued.
I'm at Oscars.org, listeners.
So it just says best original and adapted screenplay?
Yeah, according to the Oscars.
Good. Okay, well, good.
As I call them.
Forget IMDb.
You can read your IMDb awards on another podcast, which I'm sure will be coming up in 2 days. adapted screenplay, District 9, and Education, In the Loop, Precious, and Up in the Air.
First of all, Kelly Wand, you didn't say the full name of Precious.
Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Very nice.
Screenplay by Jeffrey Fletcher. I feel bad. See, I didn't list name any of the writers after all that gobbledygook they spouted.
All right. So what do you guys think of this that category? Anything missing?
Loop. No, In the Loop should win. It's the greatest writing I've seen in the last 5 years.
What is In the Loop adapted from? Why isn't that original screenplay? I'm curious.
It's from Le Pacte Loop.
It's from history.
Okay.
Isn't it from Thick of It? Isn't it basically an adaptation of that television series?
There's one character that it has in that it has in common with Thick of It, and it has several actors in common with Thick of It. But otherwise, I guess because it's one character who is already written, maybe that's part of it. Based
it's
on
a spinoff.
Okay, there you go. I'd buy that.
According to Wikipedia, the poor man's IMDb.
So I'm actually right. It is. They are talking about Thick of It.
Well, yeah. It's clearly. I mean, yeah. Armando Iannucciani. Oh gosh, I feel bad that I can't say the guy's name because he's brilliant. But yeah, he's the guy that did Thick of It, and he used some of the same actors. And it's the
Will
same
Smith guy. Was in the series, apparently.
Is it Iannucci or Iannucci?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good.
I don't know. That's a very good question, Dingus. I'm not sure.
So of those choices, you would choose In the Loop, right?
I would, easily.
I have a different... I would pick... My original screenplay would go to 5 Minutes...
This is adapted.
My adapted screenplay. Whoops. My adapted screenplay would go to Coraline.
That's not up for anything.
I know. That's right. I'm saying, is if I were to pick... If I was an Academy of One, I would give the adapted screenplay to Coraline. Having read the book and seen the movie, I really liked what Henry Selick did with Neil Gaiman's book. And Coraline was one of my favorite movies from last year. And as much as I liked In the Loop as well, I just really admired what they did with Coraline as a screenplay. So that would be my pick if I was the Academy.
That's very good. What I did was look at the nominees, choose what I liked best of their choices, and then cross out and put my own nominees in addition. So of their nominees, I would choose In the Loop. But I would have also nominated Coraline, Fantastic Mr. Fox, and Single Man. And of those, if I could choose, if I were the Academy, I would have given Tom Ford a Single Man.
Oh, he wrote that. He wrote the adaptation of that?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Wow. Good. Okay. All right. Kelly Wan, do you have something that you felt got left out over the course of the year? It was Watchmen for you, wasn't it?
No. I'm ashamed of that.
I'm giving you. You know what? I liked Watchmen. Don't be ashamed of Watchmen. Watchmen was a very brave movie. I quite liked Watchmen.
But it's got so many issues. It shouldn't have been on it. I don't know.
Yeah, but don't count it out. It's going to show up as we talk, I think.
Good. All right. So now
was
that
it up for best visual effects? That's downright rude, isn't it?
Well, there's only room for 3 movies on that.
That's true. I can see why. Makes perfect sense.
All right, what about original screenplays, now that I've given away my choice?
Yeah. Wait, did you?
Kelly, give us the nominees.
Hurt Locker, Inglourious Bastards, The Messenger, A Serious Man, and Up. Not Up in the Air, just Up.
Those are good. Those are good.
Well, up in the Air is, of course, adapted. So.
It is?
I'm just saying...
Oh, right. But Up was nominated, right. Kelly, you're confusing everyone.
Well, I think they got confused and nominated. Never mind.
Up, written by Tom McCarthy, by the way, with the Pixar guys. So the one, I like those choices for the most part. I'm glad Avatar wasn't in there, by the way. I would have been just livid if Avatar, give it to technical awards, fine. What do I care? But, oh, I'm so glad that it didn't get a writing nod.
No best picture. Nothing should win best picture and not at least be nominated for screenplay. That's Kelly Wan's new rule.
Well, nothing should be nominated for best picture and not at least be well written. So I'm with you there, Kelly Wan, in spirit.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So my favorite original screenplay from last year was 5 Minutes of Heaven. Oliver Hirschbegel directed it. He didn't write it, though. It was from another screenplay. With Liam Neeson and James Nesbitt as these two guys dealing with the fallout of the troubles in Ireland. That would have been my choice. If I was the Academy, I would just say, Guy Hibbert, he's the guy who wrote the screenplay, here is your Academy Award. That's how it would have gone for me. Dingus, what about you?
What would he have said?
I don't know. Probably something in an Irish accent, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. He would have said fair play to you.
Yeah.
All right, for me, yeah. of Of those five choices, I would choose The Hurt Locker. But if I were the Academy and had been nominating, I would easily have chosen for my best original screenplay, Duncan Jones for Moon.
Mm. Can I change my answer?
No. and also Nathan Parker. I don't know what I don't know what there's ampersands and the word and, so I don't know how they work together or what, but I would choose Moon.
Oh, Nathan Parker was another writer on that. Okay, good.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not going to change my answer, but we all loved Moon. Kelly Wan, did you see Moon?
No.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Well, you would love Moon if you saw it. So all three of us are Moon fans, but Dingus, you are the official ambassador to Moon. You are like the biggest fan amongst us of Moon. So.
Right. I'm the Moon evangelist.
You are the Moon evangelist, right.
Of this podcast.
We're simply Moon disciples.
And you can expect to hear more of Moon as we go on. Spoiler alert.
Kelly Wand, what else you got for us? Give us another category.
I wasn't ready yet. Short film, makeup, Star Trek's up.
You can just rattle those off. I mean, go ahead. If anybody has anything to say, I'm sure they'll weigh in.
And Il Divo and The Young Victoria. Matt,
I'll just jump in and say that I would choose either District 9 or Moon for makeup. Both had really good makeup. District 9 is the more... The more obvious makeup because of all the prosthetics that at work, but the makeup in Moon in distinguishing characters, and that's all I'm going to say, is really quite good.
Okay, good.
Best documentary.
Dingus saw one of those, so he might want to weigh in. I don't do documentaries, just so you guys know.
Ever? You don't do any Errol Morris stuff?
Those aren't documentaries. Those are Errol Morris movies.
Oh.
It happened to be about real things.
The Cove, Food Inc., Burma VJ. I heard Food Inc.'s pretty gnarly and it'll make you never want to eat anywhere again. I like those kind of movies usually. The Most Dangerous Man in America, Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, and Which Way Home?
Well, the choice is clearly going to have to be between the first two you mentioned, Food Inc. or The Cove. And I would choose The Cove because it's the only one I've seen, and it's a very, very powerful movie. Mm.
I don't know if I can handle that, even listening to you right now.
You can't handle me even saying the words The Cove?
Yeah. It just sounds like Open Water 3, but with dolphins.
Except that it's closed water, so it's the opposite. Well, only people that's a comment for only people who've seen The Cove. Ta-da!
No, everybody knows what a cove is, Dingus, or people who know what the word means.
Well, it's not completely closed. If we may go off on this for about 5 minutes, the listeners go, "Oh my god, is this really happening?" Best film editing. Anyone care?
Oh, I do.
Avatar. Now he cares.
I'm going to constantly care about any of these categories because I love this stuff, so suck it.
All right. Okay, I'll suck it. Avatar, District 9, Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, and Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Tom?
Oh, you have to do the caring for both of us, Dingus. I think as the best I can come in, like the most I can do in terms of caring about technical stuff is probably cinematography. I don't go as far as editing generally. So you've got to carry the water for us on this, Dingus.
Tom, editing's an important part of filmmaking.
I'm sure it is, but I don't tend to, unless it's done poorly.
Ask Marsha Lucas about Jaws.
Don't notice. Did she actually help on Jaws as well?
She said, for better or worse, I got the credit for Jaws, and then Spielberg got mad at her.
Was she actually the editor on Jaws?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay.
I think so.
All right, Dingus. So of those, what do you like? How's that category look to you?
Before I say that, though, you've already mentioned 5 Minutes of Heaven, and one of the things that really struck me about that film is how it was edited. Doesn't that hit you at all? I mean, it's a fantastically edited film.
Do you mean on a macro level or from scene to scene on a more micro level?
The film is just very well edited. I mean, I remember that. I remember actually writing that down and thinking, man, this is so well put together.
Okay, then that's my pick.
All right. Of those, nobody wants to play. Of those picks, I would pick Inglourious Basterds. I think it's very well edited. And if I chose something else, I would choose Moon. Although I will have to say one cool thing about Hurt Locker is it was edited by a guy named Bob Murawski. And I'm always pleased to see that name, Murawski. I don't know who it refers to, but he worked on a Spider-Man film, and he also worked on Hurt Locker. So good job, Bob Murawski.
But by Marsha Lucas, I meant Verna Fields, by the way.
Oh, nicely done. My choice would be Moon. I think it's a very well edited film, but of those five nominees, I would choose Inglourious Bastards.
Okay, good.
So should we move on to cinematography since you
Tom refuses to even pretend.
Oh no! My pick is 5 Minutes of Heaven.
Oh, did you say that?
Dingus pointed it out for me, and I decided that was a good idea, and so I'm penciling that in. If I was an Academy of One, I would come to the editor of 5 Minutes from Heaven and say, "Sir, you are the winner."
Cinematography starts with a C. Okay. Avatar, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Did that come out this last year?
Apparently.
I've never seen any of them. Hurt Locker, Inglourious Bastards, and The White Ribbon.
Ooh, we should see that.
Which we haven't seen yet. Although Tom has, or hasn't.
So of those, I would not pick any of them. I am a enormous – I can name two cinematographers, I think, and that's about it. One of whom is Christopher – good Lord, I want to say Lloyd, but that's not right. Who's the guy that works with
– Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Doyle. Good Lord, I can't believe I almost blew that. It's Christopher Doyle and Roger Deakins. So my choice would be Serious Man, which Roger Deakins shot for the Coen brothers.
Yeah. See, Avatar shouldn't be up for cinematography because it's not like the dude had a light meter or anything. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like the effects guys were the cinematographers.
But it comes to the effects. I mean, again, it's without context, it doesn't do much for me. Yeah, sure. It's technically very, very adept at cinematography. I'll give it that. But for me, what Roger Deakins did to fit in with the whole package and in A Serious Man, you know, the way he lit the progression of the thunderstorm, the way that the neighborhood looked, the weird little dream sequence where they're sending Uncle Arthur out. Roger Deakins is so in tune with what the Coen brothers want.
Movies where the cinematography reflects the main character's mental state are always the most impressive to me, and that's why you're right.
But that said, Hurt Locker looked pretty dang spectacular.
That's my choice, Hurt Locker, yeah.
It's actually called The Hurt Locker.
And that sun-leached Middle Eastern look, I mean, that is so, well, it's iconic. I mean, it's, you know, sort of like the jungle would have been in the Vietnam era, that carries so much weight and baggage with it. I mean, it's, seeing that done well, that in and of itself can, there's so much to that, like seeing the way that movie is shot.
Right. So, the guy who shot Hurt Locker is named Barry Aykroyd. Mm. And he also did United 93. I don't know if you guys saw
it. Wow. How about that?
Mm. He's very, very good. And I love the cinematography in that. He also did a film called Wind That Shakes the Barley, which is
a gorgeous movie. Yeah.
So I would definitely choose Hurt Locker. And in place of Avatar and Harry Potter, I would stick in A Single Man in District 9.
Oh, Single Man. I might change my mind now. Single Man was so lovely. I mean, with the color fading in and out, like Kelly Wand, you were talking about the main character's mental state.
Well, I had a hard time choosing between Single Man and Hurt Locker when I was thinking of who I would give the award to. And Single Man just really had an effect on me, and it's just so unbelievably gorgeous and rich. It's an incredibly rich film. But I have to go with Hurt Locker because I just keep thinking of the images in that film.
Dingus, do you know offhand who shot Single Man?
It's a guy named Edward Grau. I think he's Spanish, but I don't know anything about him.
Okay, well, because what I was curious is if there were other things you knew that he shot.
I really don't.
Okay.
I thought I read, although I was totally wrong about the Jaws editor.
Marsha Lucas was the cinematographer.
Marsha Lucas. What the hell am I talking about?
She's George Lucas's sister.
They were, weren't they some? Never mind. I thought the cinematographer for Serious Man was the guy they normally work with but took a break from for Burn After Reading, and they used a different dude. And so this was like their reunion with their usual cinematographer.
They always use Deakins, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, they've worked with, like, didn't Barry Sonnenfeld, wasn't he a cinematographer for the Coen brothers early on? I mean, they've used different...
Yeah, he did Raising Arizona before he started making his own movies. Yeah,
but Deakins, I think, is their go-to guy. He definitely shot Serious Man, right? Am I wrong about that?
I don't know.
No, I remember, because I remember one of the things we talked about, too, is that triumvirate, although technically it's four of the Coen brothers, Roger Deakins and Carter Burwell, who does their soundtracks. And Serious Man was just, again, all three, well, four of them.
Roger Deakins.
Right.
Tenth collaboration with him.
All right, so that's cinematography. Good.
Hmm. Okay. Costume design. Music. I know Dingus cares about that stuff.
I care about costume design too. I'm telling you, you're not gonna, other than the short films, you're not gonna be able to throw something at me that I don't care about. Costume design, I'm clearly gonna give it to Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, although I loved Single Man.
Your other options are Bright Star, Coco Before Chanel, that's a Nine, and The Young Victoria.
Nine had a lot of lingerie in it, I can tell you guys.
And you know, I would nominate Watchmen. I think Watchmen deserves a nomination in costuming. I think it's got great costumes. Not just the wacky hero costumes, but the stuff that they're wearing when they're not heroes, like Patrick Wilson's ratty old coats and all that stuff. I thought Watchmen had great costumes, but I would give it to Imaginarium, I think.
Watchmen had a good costume. Okay.
Only when he went to Vietnam. Watchmen had just great production design as well as good costumes. I agree with you, Dingus. Yeah, that's what I was when I was thinking of visual effects. Yeah, that's more a production design issue. But yeah, so all right. Is there an Academy Award for production design?
Well, there's art direction.
Ah,
we're not up to that yet.
All right,
racing towards it, hurtling.
Hurtling.
Music original score. I really don't care about music at all.
I so love this category. Please don't just – you can sigh. I love the way you sigh, Kelly, but go ahead and give us
a comment. All right. There's probably one person out there who does care besides you. So here we go. Avatar, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Hurt Locker, Sherlock Holmes, and Up.
And the way you say that exactly is why I care, because Avatar and Sherlock Holmes should be knocked out of this category summarily.
I don't remember the music from Avatar at all, except that horrible thing playing over the end credits.
It's crap.
Which was crap, right. What was the good music?
There's no good music.
Do hum the theme from Avatar. Go.
I can do it. Okay. You guys ready? Yeah, that was totally
it. That's Monte Cristo.
Oh,
I know that music anywhere.
Good point.
No, this is it. Ba 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 ba. Da da dun dun dun.
Okay, I'll do my rendition now.
That's Jurassic Park.
All right, good. So readers, send in your submission. Who was correct for this week's contest?
Which of the three of us deserves an Oscar for music? Truth be told, I don't remember the music from Up either.
Oh, the music. See, that would be my pick. It was Michael Giacchino.
Yeah.
Who does a lot of music. But the music for Up was so playful and appropriate, and they stretched this motif in so many different ways. I loved that. That would be my pick, is the music.
Okay, that's my pick too.
Okay.
The music for Up is awesome because he does have to do a lot of different things, including the newsreel music. They ask him to do a lot of things, and sometimes they ask his name is Michael Giacchino, I think. They ask him – sometimes he has to do – like if they can't get John Williams, they'll ask him to do a John Williams-type score. But I think he also did Star Trek, but I'm not entirely sure if he did the Star Trek music. But the Up music is fantastic.
Yeah. So is that your pick as well, Dingus?
No. True to form, I would have to pick Clint Mansell's Moon music.
Mm, yeah, that's a good point.
It was extremely meaningful to me. And then I would totally scratch off Avatar and Sherlock Holmes and not even allow them to be nominated. Hurt Locker was fine, but I also really liked the music for Vinyan. And I think you have to go back and watch the movie to get it, because Tom, you've often asked, or a couple times you've asked if I thought Vinyan was a horror film. You've asked that, right?
Yeah.
Right. I don't necessarily think so, but the guy who did the music did the music for High Tension and Inside. So,
wow.
So clearly that I think you're right in what they're going for, and I remember really liking the music for Vinyan.
Well, I also have a wide definition of horror, so yeah. But that's very illuminating to hear that it's the guy that did those other two soundtracks. All right. Good. So there was the Sherlock Holmes thing. I'm surprised you guys don't remember it because I know it annoyed, I think, you, Dingus. It was Hans Zimmer doing a little fiddle, like a little Irish sea jaunty thing with a fiddle, if I'm not mistaken. Wasn't that in Sherlock Holmes, their music?
But it was just and I don't know if I should blame Hans Zimmer. It was just overwhelmingly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was so loud.
Well, it was very intrusive, and it really called attention to itself. And I'm not sure that was appropriate, right. But I certainly remember it. And not necessarily because I liked it. I mean, it was okay. But I'm like, wow, they got a soundtrack all right.
And I much preferred the music in Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. I liked the music, some of the music in Fantastic Mr. Fox. I liked some of Carter Burwell's music in Serious Man. So I think there's a lot of other choices, and they went with what was easy, Avatar and Sherlock Holmes, which were just like getting hit over the head with baseball bats.
In 3D.
Right.
Quite an endorsement.
On your ears.
So, Dingus, do you also actually care about best song? That's I can't believe I even asked that. I'm sure you do.
Actually, for once, I don't. And I was willing, I was willing to let that go because I think you actually have something that you would mention.
And in best song?
Isn't there some woman you're now in love with because of her best song?
Oh, but I'm not sure that I would. Yeah, I mean, that's such a small. Well, give us the nominees, Kelly Wand, and then I'll mention my best song.
Well, two are from the same movie, which
yeah, Princess and the Princess Frog or whatever. Yeah, right.
Yeah, Almost There and Down in New Orleans, which almost sounds like one long title. Loan de Paname. I haven't seen any of these movies, and I'm a total feige. So, sorry about that. Take It All, Hardworking Musicians, and The Weary Kind, the theme from Crazy Heart.
Yeah, I generally don't. So what Dinks is talking about is the song that played over the credits for Carriers, another horror movie, which some might not call a horror movie. Who's an indie musician from New York named Nina Nastasia, who I discovered from that movie. But again, I'm not sure. Well, you know what? Okay, yeah, I'm going to go with that. The song was so appropriate to the movie, and it was used so well. It bled in with the final sequence, and the lyrics were really poetically appropriate in an odd elliptical way to the movie that, yeah, I'm going to pick Nina Nastasia's Ugly Face, song from Carrier, as I'm going to give her the Academy Award from the Tom Chick Academy of One.
Wow.
So there you go.
And you're the only one really voting, so.
That's true.
It's a unanimous decision.
But Dingus, none of the songs that got nominated really, so none of us saw Crazy Hearts, right?
No, it's Crazy Heart. Stop pluralizing it.
Yeah, you've been doing that the whole podcast. You've been taking and moving around S's.
Remember, it's Inglorious Bastard.
You are not the stoner.
No, I don't know any. There was nothing that stuck out for me this year.
There wasn't a Sam Rockwell musical number from Moon.
Did he get dancing in Moon?
He did a whole thing to Stuck in the Middle with You, I believe. The Steeler's Wheel. I am more interested in something called what I would call like adapted scores. Like I really like what Quentin Tarantino did by appropriating music in Inglorious Bastard from other films, like the opening song.
You just called it Inglorious Bastard. Did what Tom does. Okay.
Yeah, I'm inverting his little pluralization
to make up for all the spare S's.
And also the music that was appropriated for the film Gigantic. I like discovering new music in listening to films, and you can't say that those songs were written for the films. They're just used to make atmosphere.
Oh, these are for songs that are written for the movie. Okay, well, in that case, Nina Nastasia, I have to take back her Oscar. I feel bad now.
She'll understand.
Okay.
That's what happened to Stevie Wonder.
He took back the Oscar he wanted to give to Nina Nastasia?
Yes, he did.
We all remember where we were that night.
All right, what's the next category? Rock and roll. What do you got for us, Kelly Wan?
Speaking of S's, your mother K's S is an H, by the way. But if I could bring the house down, best art direction. Do we already do this?
Nope.
No.
Rock and roll.
Nope.
Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
And Scene.
Yep. We're done.
Try and guess. Okay, wait. Here's three of them, and you have to guess the last two. That'll be really fun to listen to.
I'm sure Dingus knows them already.
Imaginarium, Nine, The Young Victoria, blank and blank.
Avatar, Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, you're looking. You're not allowed to look.
What do I? What would I be looking at? Oh, that's right. We're all in the same room together.
Hmm. Nude. JK. We're nude in separate rooms.
All right.
You
what else?
Don't
you
have any opinions?
I think we voiced our opinion. Okay. So what's the next one?
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes.
Well, we both waxed poetic, or all of us waxed poetic on the art direction of Imaginarium when we saw the film. I don't think any of these other films even touch it.
Can I reiterate my two-word appraisal of the art direction in Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus? Hmm. And I'm only going to say one of the words, and I'm going to use the beginning letter for the other word. My two-word description of the art direction in Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus is F Avatar.
Well, that upset Dingus last time you said it.
So. Why don't you say
it with me?
You should say Favatar.
Fabutar.
All right, Kelly,
by the way, Where the Wild Things Are was not nominated.
You know what that is? I was thinking about that.
Just saying.
I know, because I was thinking about that, and I'm sad that those Wild Things didn't get their due.
Well, do you want to talk about that now? Where would you have not? Would you have nominated in this category in special effects or visual effects or what?
Well, the nominee, the Academy of Tom Chick does not do nominees. It just designates one winner. And it would go to Imaginarium Dr. Parnassus. But after the show, I would take Where the Wild Things Are aside and say, you guys had a really good shot at it. I just wanted to say you did great work. But you had a really good shot. It was a tough decision. I would take, I would say that to them.
And then you give them the tough decision, Oscar, that you stole from Nastasia Kinski earlier, whoever it was. Okay, great. I don't remember Dingus actually picking anything, but we'll move on anyway.
Got to pick Dingus?
Art direction?
Yeah. Well, we did. Yeah, we gave that award already.
Oh.
That was why Tom said end scene. It's a fait accompli.
Okay, here's one with a predictable response from both of you. Best animated feature film. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Sherlock Holmes. Wait, Star Trek. Wait, let me start all over. Fantastic Mr. Fox, Princess and the Frog, The Secret of Kells, Up, and Coraline.
So I first of all want to say I love when the nominees come out, and in a big category like that, there's something that I've never even heard of. I'm like, yeah awesome, because I tend to keep up with this stuff. I'm like, okay, well, whatever that is, I got to see it.
Does anybody even know what that is?
No idea. I love that I know nothing about it. But
I thought I was pretending I knew what it was. Because I thought, oh, I'm the guy who didn't see it.
Nope, never even heard of it before.
Well, then it should win.
It's a Secret of Kelly Wand, is what I'm going to call it from now on.
The Secret of Kill. Okay. Yeah, I think, well, Dingus, that, I mean, it's...
I'm an open book.
I loved both Up and Coraline, but I would definitely, the Academy of Tom Chick would recognize Coraline.
The Academy of Christian Morosky would recognize The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
The Academy of The Secret of Kells would recognize Up.
Wow.
I was pretty gay for Up. Because and Sad, I would... you'd never see Sad, and that was pretty sad. That was the saddest movie since Bambi. And that takes balls. Sadness takes balls.
Yep. I agree.
Well, you know, I Up is on my list of the top 10 films of the year for me, and Mr. Fox is not, but it's I don't know how to describe this without sounding like an idiot. So, you know, why worry?
Sir.
First of all, Avatar should be nominated in this category.
Yes.
But I would put Fantastic Mr. Fox,
which
was a feature.
See how they clump all animated forms into one thing, except Avatar.
Right.
Like stop motion.
That is a good point, yeah. Like stop motion is a very different technique than, say, what they did in Up and what they did in yeah. So why doesn't Avatar, I don't know. It's because Avatar has so much, well, money and, you know, it, at its core, it's a live action movie and the animation
it has
is in the service,
action.
And the animation is in the service of trying to look like live action. And none of the animated movies that are in this list do that. Because you don't, for instance, you don't see that Jim Carrey Christmas Carol in there.
Good point.
So, see what happens when you, when you don't know which side of the live-action animated divide that you're on. Yeah.
I can't wait to find out.
I just... Continue. Sorry.
I just can't wait to find out what Secret of Kells is.
Right. Yeah, we have to see it. Maybe it's the best one. We're all idiots. There's a lot of evidence for that, actually. okay, we're up to the big ones, as it were, which means we're almost done. I mean, okay. Best actress in a supporting role. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Penelope Cruz in Nine, Vera Farmiga in Up in the Air, Maggie Gyllenhaal in Crazy Heart, Anna Kendrick in Up in the Air. Ah, oh, cheating. Monique in Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
I'm so glad Anna Kendrick was nominated. She's fantastic. I love that girl. I mean, she's not going to win, but I getting that nomination means we're going to be seeing so much more of her, and I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I'm pleased about that, too.
I didn't see any of these movies, but I'm very pleased.
Well, Anna Kendrick is mainly, she carried pretty much a fantastic, well, not alone, I mean, but she was largely responsible for what made a fantastic movie called Rocket Science work so well. And seeing her, you know, get a little older and now doing Up in the Air, and I just am so glad at that nomination. Dingus, do you want to do, is there anyone that you would rule out there?
I would rule out anybody I hadn't seen. And I haven't seen either Maggie Gyllenhaal or Penelope Cruz. So I would put other people in their place.
So real quick, I want to say, I think what's going on with Penelope Cruz, she was fine in Nine, but the real standout in Nine was Marion Cotillard. I don't know how to say her name. I'm a jerk.
I think you said it. That's correct.
Okay. I mispronounced Gyllenhaal.
But I think what happened with Penelope Cruz is she was getting the nomination for Vicky Cristina Barcelona. It's sort of like...
Because
you're so good
at
that. They gave her another one. It's like, you were so good. We nominated you last year. We're going to nominate you again because you were so good in Vicky Cristina Barcelona. But she is, I mean, she is, she's, you can see definitely in Nine just how good Penelope Cruz can be, but it's nothing like what she did in Vicky Cristina Barcelona. So.
Yeah, also,
did you see Banditas?
Banditas.
What's that?
Yeah, her and Selma Hayek are like these, seductive bank robber western types. No.
Can you make your special noise now? No, not that one. Your girl noise.
Eh?
That's not that one either. Is that your girl noise?
Your rower noise.
Be more specific. Oh.
Thank you.
I don't know. Cruz definitely the rich man's Hayek now, though, right?
Well, the thing is, she's been I don't know, lucky enough or people have recognized her talent, but she's been given really strong material. You know, she's a beautiful woman and that's great, but a lot of times someone that attractive doesn't get recognized and given good material. And she was in a terrible, terrible movie based on a Philip Roth novel. I can't remember what it was called, with Ben Kingsley playing in, maybe it wasn't even Ben. I think it was Ben Kingsley.
It was Ben Kingsley. Yeah.
Playing an agent.
It was called, it starts with an E.
I'm not going to remember. It's from it's typical Philip Roth about, you know, an old Jewish man reflecting on his age.
It's whatever. About death. It starts with, oh God.
Enduring Stain.
No, it's one word.
Human Stain. Enduring Stain is a Flannery O'Connor short story. I can't believe
it. Gross.
Anyway, she was really good in that as well. So for such a gorgeous woman, I love the fact that she is so talented and gets good parts. There was the terrible movie, she was really good in it, that this E movie that Dingus, we can't think of the name of, wasn't very good, but she got a good part in it, and she was really good.
She doesn't really do it for me, but I think she is talented.
Yeah. Well, you say that, Dingus, but now I don't think you've seen Vicky Cristina Barcelona 9 or this E! Movie, have you?
No.
Because I felt the same way as you, Dingus, until I saw those three things. And I was like, and I agree, when you say she doesn't particularly do it for me, I mean, I think she's gorgeous, but...
I don't think she's that sexy. She doesn't, okay. She doesn't get me there. And I've seen her in a few things. But yeah, I would just scratch her off and Maggie and Monique because I haven't seen those things, and I would put other people in their places.
Who do you got?
I would put Paulina Gaitan. I wouldn't give her the award, but I would put her. She played Syra in Sin Nombre, and I thought she was great.
Elegy.
Yes. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you. I would put Meryl Streep from Fantastic Mr. Fox because she knocked me out. And the one I would give the award to if I were the Academy.
She wasn't supporting, though. She was the main actress. Meryl Streep was the lead actress in Fantastic Mr. Fox.
It was a supporting role. If it were the Academy of Christian Morosky, I would give the best supporting actress to Julianne Moore for A Single Man.
Very good. Oh.
Mm.
Now here's what I would do. I'm going to reenact this for you guys. Mm. Hi, Judd, is your wife home? Can I talk to her for a minute? Leslie Mann, my name is Tom Chick. I'm here from the Tom Chick Academy Award Academy to give you your award for Best Supporting Actress for Funny People.
Wow.
So you have to deliver it.
It's only one of me here. I mean, yeah, I don't have a staff or anything, so yeah.
I'd like to thank you. On my porch for this.
No, first and foremost, he wants to thank his Lord Jesus Christ.
I like that she opens her own door.
Judd Apatow opens the door. She makes him answer the door. And then I have to say, is Leslie home? And then she comes to the door.
I think Seth Rogen answers the door, actually. in a bathrobe.
Yeah.
But to be just to elaborate on that, it was definitely a supporting role, but it just really, she is so like honest and good, and she, you know, Judd Apatow gives her these supporting parts, and she breathes so much life into what could be a throwaway bit, and what she brings to Funny People, sort of in the third act basically, is so valuable. You know, what could have been just another dude movie, you know, dudes, bros, a bromance, whatever. I mean, she's so crucial to what makes that movie ultimately work. And my favorite supporting actress performance of the year. So there you go. All right, Kelly, one.
That's pretty exciting. I've got that sitting here at home from Netflix right now, and I still haven't seen it.
Good.
That's exciting to the listeners to hear.
Well, what's your choice, Kelly?
Monique.
Nicely done.
In Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Can I just say Monique was good, but also Mariah Carey could have qualified for that supporting actress. And I'm not kidding. She was very good. In Push, the Precious novel by Sapphire. All right, Kelly, give us another category. What do you got?
See, we should have done one of the supporting actor ones first, like the Oscars do, because no one's listening now. I guess I could skip ahead. All right. Best actor in a supporting role, or outstanding actor in a supporting role, Matt Damon in Invictus. Which I know none of us saw. Woody Harrelson in The Messenger and Zombieland.
Messengers.
It says just The Messenger on Oscars.org.
Tom calls it The Messengers.
Oh,
I think
I'm
we should respect him.
Okay, Woody Harrelson's in The Messengers.
Woody's.
Christopher Plummer's in The Last Stations. Stanley Tucci's in The Lovely Bone. And Christoph's in Ingloria Bastard.
Okay, I'm the only one here who's seen Lovely Bones. I think it is I think they're as the British would say, taking a piss by nominating Stanley Tucci. He was so terrible in that. It was such he's just playing a creepy old child murderer, and it was all in the hairpiece and the contact lenses. He was terrible in Lovely Bones.
Yeah, well, especially since this category has what. For me, is the most egregious leave out, or well, one of the two most egregious leave outs.
All right, what do you got?
You know, as much as I love Christoph Waltz, my choice has to be Jackie Earle Haley from Watchmen.
Mm. Yeah, very good.
That was my favorite performance the moment I saw it, and nothing knocked it out. As much as I loved Heath Ledger, and he should have been nominated for Imaginarium, Jackie Earle Haley was just a knockout. And think of what he had to do, being under a mask for most of that film. He was fantastic.
I don't see how you're going to follow up on that, Dingus. You have someone else who was left out, because that's beautiful. Yep.
Do you have a different choice though?
You know, I might now have to erase the one that I was going to pick. No, all of my actor things were people who weren't even nominated. So yeah, I have someone different, but you said there were two that you felt were left out.
Yeah, but that's a different category.
Oh, not two for supporting actor.
No. I'm talking about as far as things that were left out, there were two things that I thought were fairly egregious, actually three now that I think about it. But not having Jackie Earle Haley nominated and Stanley Tucci in instead, after what you just said, or even Matt Damon, who I love, but Invictus, come on.
So besides the one you just mentioned, the overlooking Jackie Earle Haley, you've got two more for us that you think are hugely egregious? That we haven't mentioned yet, you're saying?
In different categories.
Good. Okay, that are coming up. Okay. So I would pick Peter Capaldi from In the Loop.
Of course.
Because he was such the engine of that movie. And not only that, but our friend Gordon Cameron, who's a huge film snob, and he's one of my favorite movie dorks, because he has such distinct, like, Gordon Cameron will come out of left field with this opinion that to me seems just incredibly crazy, but he's so articulate about it. And so I separately arrived at this moment. I mean, when I was talking to Gordon, he started to mention this one thing from In the Loop, and I immediately knew what he was talking about. There's a tiny brief scene after Peter Capaldi, after his character has capitulated to the Americans, where the camera just lingers on him for a moment, and he is so literally furious throughout this movie that to have this stark, quiet moment, he's alone in a room, there's no dialogue, and the camera is just right up in his face. I mean, that man is a fantastic actor, and he just is so driven. My choice, even though I love Jackie Earle Haley, again, when it comes to the context and what an actor brings to a movie, yeah, that's a great case for Jackie Earle Haley. But for me personally, it was what Peter Capaldi brought to In the Loop, and it was partly from knowing that character so well through the series The Thick of It, and just seeing a new side of him and seeing him drive a whole new kind of process. So that would be my pick.
Well, I can't argue against that, because he is just a joy to listen to and watch. I mean, the words coming out of that guy, he could say anything. It's just amazing. And for me, he's the soul of that movie, even though I know there are other emotional centers in that movie. But watching that guy, he is such an engine.
Yeah.
And I could watch him do those scenes over and over and over again.
He's the guy whose scenes you look forward to most.
And the thing is, it's not even just the profanity. I mean, the profanity is very funny stuff. It's amazing stuff. But there's so much more to it than that in terms of what he is doing and how he reacts to people. No,
I'm not just talking about profanity when I say words.
No, I know, I know.
The way he chews on words is phenomenal.
I just say that, Dingus, because I think that's what so many people sort of distill his performance down to, is, oh, yeah, he was the guy who cussed a lot in that movie. And right, I think that's doing an injustice to mainly remember him for the profanity. I know that there was I saw a short clip where he was coming out on walking up the carpet in some British awards film, and the people with the camera were saying, hey, come over here and cuss for us. And I just feel like that's kind of sad that that's what people recognize, and that there was so much more stuff that he was doing than just cussing.
Right.
You're Jackie Earle Haley, and that's a great one too, Dingus. Wow, okay. Stupid Academy.
Yeah.
How do they leave these guys out? I thought for sure, you know, and I, even as I was going through this, and I was being fairly meticulous, I forgot Peter Capaldi. And how do they leave him out? How do they leave Jackie Earle Haley out?
Was that movie, well, Jackie Earle Haley got jacked, but didn't In Loop come out in 2008?
No. It was a summer release. It had a very limited release in the summer of 2009. Definitely a 2009 movie. It was my number two or three on the list. Yeah.
Well, he got nominated for best supporting screenplay. I mean,
oh, right, right.
Screenplay.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. I'm dumb. when I was watching that movie, you're hoping. I wish this character had a scene with the Gandolfini character.
I know. Yes.
Together. One of the best scenes in the movie.
And if they were lovers, it would be great if they were lovers.
They're almost, yeah.
But you're right, Kelly Wand. It is that, in a way, is sort of the, if this had been like a conventional action movie or something, and it has some of that structure, that's the climax of the movie. That's the big set piece.
Yeah.
When James Gandolfi, when they finally encounter each other and unleash their own particular styles, like James Gandolfini is being all cool and snide, and Peter Capaldi is just kind of quietly raging at him. I mean, that is an amazing clash of the titans right there.
Yeah. It comes off as sort of an inconclusive. Like,
yes.
I'm not too sure who won that one.
Exactly.
They both think they did. They both walk away with their dignity.
Yep. Yep. It's an amazing battle scene. Yeah.
I really adore it.
Yeah, this moment where the camera spins around them like in The Matrix.
Good. Wow. All right. Well,
compare the loop to The Matrix, you bastard.
How dare you?
Well, one of them is Agent Smith and one of them is Neo. And then you see them just, you know, instead of guns, they're using words, of course.
Neo means new.
Do you remember who does get the last word in that encounter, by the way?
I would assume Gandolfini, because I remember being surprised a little bit.
Basically, Gandolfini thinks he gets the last word, but then Malcolm Tucker comes back to him and says, oh, and one more thing, don't ever call me English.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, James Gandolfini has no idea what he means.
Yeah.
So, it's a matter where they each think they've won, you know?
Yeah. that's a good, yeah, I can't believe it. That line, that movie's so dense with genius lines. It's hard to remember them all.
Yep. Give us one, Dingus.
One what?
Let's go around the room and each do a line from In the Loop.
I'm not. You have to start that. I've got one.
Okay, go.
What about him?
Okay, that's not going to work. Kelly, so you saw it. You've seen it most recently, right? Can you give us a line?
Just the part where Gandolfini's pretending he's a zit, like John Belushi. That's kind of good. Does that count as a line?
Sure, that works. A little bit of business. Okay. All right, let's go to another category. What do you got for us?
Sorry, I'm not good with quotes.
You know what that is? That's kind of Dingus's. I gave you one. Don't ever call me English.
All right, then I'll say fuckity bye-bye then. How about that?
Okay. White Stripes, out of the room. There's only two people in the White Stripes.
Climbing the Mountain of Conflict?
You sound like a Nazi Julie Andrews.
Very nice. Good job.
I hate actors.
All right, Kelly Wand, give us another category or we're just going to start doing lines. We might do
actors
a whole
scene. Are so precious based on the novel Push by Sapphire. Okay, best director. We're up to this. Ready?
Here we go.
So real quick, before we launch into these, I don't want to... We've already done our top 10... movies of the year list. I'm assuming.
What?
I just want to say, yeah. I'm assuming that for best picture, we would each pick our favorite movie of the year, which for me and Kelly was Serious Man, for Dingus was Moon. I'm assuming, would either of you pick a director other than the director of your favorite movie of the year?
No.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we can say, I mean, we'll talk about the list, but personally, Kelly Wan and I would pick the Coen brothers for best director and Serious Man for best film. And Dingus, you would pick Moon for best film and Duncan Jones for best director.
Absolutely.
So, okay. I just wanted to throw that out there before.
But since the Oscars is about spreading it around, nothing really is objective or scientific or, well, you're critiquing, you're comparing different, Woody Allen is right. There's no way to compare Woody Allen to Star Wars. This is all silly.
Best fascist dictator. But I'm happy to pick of the nominees going forward, now that we've sort of stipulated that our number ones are our number ones, I'm happy to pick of those that are nominated.
Oh, because you don't have the luxury to pick one of the nominees. Kelly Wand?
Exactly.
Now, yeah, okay, I see. Poor Duncan Jones. All right.
Yeah.
All right,
we don't either.
And I think that
Serious Man was, I'm sorry, real quick, Serious Man wasn't nominated for Best Picture?
Of course.
It was nominated for Best Director.
It was or was not?
It was not.
Oh, okay. All right, I cut you off, Dingus. You were saying something. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, it was nominated for Best Picture, but Kelly was saying basically the same thing.
Okay. Okay, so Kelly Wand, who are the director nominees? There's only five of them. We're not up to the whole 10 nominee section yet.
No. But the fact that there's only five director nominees and 10 picture nominees tells you everything you need to know about
Exactly.
The Oscars.
Yeah, exactly.
That sums it up. Best Director, Hurt Locker. The Hurt Locker by Catherine Bigelow. Inglourious Basterds by Quentin Tarantino's. Precious, based on the novels Push by Sapphires. Lee Daniel. Up in the Air, Jason Reitman's. And Dingus's Avatars by James Cameron's.
Jim Gum.
If he wins director again, I'm officially never doing another podcast.
Wow.
Please don't say that. We need you.
It's a win-win.
Dingus, you just made it sound like you think he's going to win.
Yeah, Dingus is scared. He smells blood in the water.
No, I think because he won the Golden Globe, I think that the person who should have won the Golden Globe will win the Oscar.
Catherine Bigelow.
Yes.
Okay, but historically, whoever wins the Golden Globe does win the Oscar.
No, whoever wins the DGA wins the Oscar.
Aha, right? I like those odds.
Who won the DGA?
Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah, and she's the first woman to do so, isn't she?
Yep, I think that's, yeah.
So I would pick, of those nominees, I would pick Catherine Bigelow. And in place of three of those dudes, I would put Neil Blomkamp, Tom Ford, and Oren Peli as best directors, instead of Jason Reitman, Lee Daniels, and James Cameron.
Oren Peli for Paranormal Activity. Interesting.
Mm. Hmm.
I love it. I love that film, and I think that film takes a lot of balls to direct. And as much as I liked Up in the Air, it just didn't hit me the way Paranormal Activities did.
All right, Kelly Wand, what do you got for us next?
Wait, Tom, are you...
I would pick the Coen brothers for Serious Man. Yes.
As would I.
But we already stipulated that, so of those directors, who would you pick?
Oh, definitely Catherine Bigelow. I mean, I make a great show of not caring about the Academy Awards, but I do like hearing about what happens, and I'm definitely rooting for her to win. I am the fact that Hurt Locker got nine nominations, that to me is a moral victory right there. But it's also the fact that it got the same amount of nominations as Avatar is, again, everything that is wrong with the stupid Academy. That the two big nominees this year are Hurt Locker and Avatar. Oh, my gosh, that's just so schizophrenic to me.
Yeah. Well, if Avatar had come out last year, Star Trek would have been nominated for 10 things. Because it was the big money maker.
Yeah, it's like Dingus was saying. I know, it's a big commercial thing, but...
Well, Star Trek's never going to be nominated for those types of things. Avatar is going to get the Titanic cred.
Yeah.
I mean, James Cameron is seen as an important dude, and everything he touched turns to gold. Star Trek is just a franchise movie, no matter
so
how
So give him a gold statue to go with his gold house.
Right.
Okay. Makes sense. And then we talk about it on a podcast, and then the cycle repeats itself next year.
Yeah, it's the circle of life.
It's something clever to say, but I think it was another podcast.
Did you want to say put pip?
No.
Nice.
All right, what's next, Kelly Wand?
We only have three left. I mean, three entire ones left. Best actress in a leading role. Isn't it a little sexist that the actress goes before the actor? Like, the actor is more suspenseful.
You know, I don't know. I think you're being a little facetious, but I question the whole idea of having to split them by gender.
I agree with you.
I see performances. I mean, they're all actors. And I think part of the problem is that you would, because there are so many male roles, that you would end up, if splitting them ultimately benefits women. But I think there is a little...
But then the year a woman wins, it really matters.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah. But when I think of performances, I mean, I don't really think of actors and actresses. It doesn't matter to me the gender of the actor. So I'm with you, Kelly Wand.
I am too. But and so are they. I mean, they started calling themselves actors instead of actresses a while ago.
Yeah. All right, Kelly Wand, so who are the nominees? Read them
Moving
out.
Moving on, now that we've addressed, we've proven ourselves fans of women. Or wait, enemies of women, I think, actually. That's how that shook out. Best actress leading role, Sandra Bullock in The Blonde Side.
Did you say The Blonde Side?
Yeah, it was. Wasn't that the Reese Witherspoon?
And none of us saw that, right? Nobody saw The Blind Side, right?
No.
I thought you did.
Well, I'm going to. I will now see it. I mean, it is now a phenomenon. I mean, I was tempted to see it just after it started making all this money, but I just cannot freaking believe that.
She's a football coach.
You know, and I saw that
she's... And she's going to win. I hate to tell you guys that.
Well, here's what I saw. I saw the trailer, so I feel like I've seen the movie.
It sounds like a female version of that one where Billy Crystal plays the basketball referee. Or no, where Whoopi Goldberg inherits the basketball team. Doesn't it kind of sound like that a little bit? Do you remember that movie?
I don't.
Called Nettie. She inherits the New York Knicks, and so she's like the basketball coach. Never mind.
I don't think she's a coach. Like, I don't think she's a coach. I think she's someone who takes in a football player and...
Oh, and, all right. See, what do I...
And he's like a big old black guy who can't read, and she helps him get adjusted. I don't know.
So it's like the soloist.
Yes.
Yes.
Very good. She's the Robert Downey Jr., and right. He is the Jamie Foxx, and there's no cello. It's a football.
Or Avatar. It's the same thing as Avatar, basically.
What isn't?
Yeah, what isn't like Avatar?
Okay, so I'm
Best
sorry.
Actress. We got Blindside.
Academy itself, exactly. Go ahead.
Sandra Bullock. Helen, I don't mean to say it like that, by the way, in case she wins and is going to hire me someday. Sandra Bullock, Helen Mirren, seems unlikely, but Carey Mulligan in Education. I'm sorry, Helen Mirren in The Last Station. I'm a really terrible MC. I don't know why.
Helen Mirren starring in Carey Mulligan.
Right. Helen Mirren's Mulligan, Carey Mulligan, Education. Gabori Sidibe in Precious, based on the novel Pushed by Sapphire. And Meryl Streep in Julie and Julia.
All right, Dingus, who's left out? Who did they miss?
Well,
Meryl Streep.
They left out my favorite performance by a female. Well, you know, I just watched Meryl Streep doing Julie and Julia, and I'm in love with her, so I can't help but fawn over her. But that film just doesn't really work, I don't think. But she's great. She is a great Julia Child. There's just no way around that. I miss, and go ahead and load up your groans. I really miss Katie Featherston because I really liked her in Paramount.
Why would we groan at that? Why would we groan at that? How dare you? We're with you. We are with you. We are not against you, Dingus. I was worried for a minute you were going to say Zoe Saldana.
When have we ever said anything against Paranormal Activity?
Exactly.
Well, Tom's a Blair Witch apologist, Heather, whatever her name is. He thinks
Donahue.
She's the best.
No, but and then he retracted it.
Exactly. I struggled with that, and I've come to terms with the fact that they're both excellent.
All right. So the person I would give it to would be Emmanuel Bayart in Vinyan.
Oh, good call. Yeah, good call. I would give it to, again, wasn't even nominated, Tilda Swinton in a movie called Julia was the bravest female performance I saw last year. It's Tilda Swinton doing what she does best and doing it incredibly well. She is just so unglamorous and real, and there is such an amazing character arc in that movie. Her performance, that movie is good, but a large part of why that movie is good is because of what her performance does in the context of what's going on. So Julia, the fact that she wasn't nominated, I was sure she was going to be nominated. And I guess it was just too small a film or something.
They've given her enough Oscars lately. And then she's, all right, yeah, Tilda Swinton, we get it. Yeah, you're good.
I'm terrible at knowing this stuff. I don't remember, but has she won Academy Awards?
Yeah.
Yes, she won for Michael Clayton.
Mm-hmm. Ah, good, good. For supporting. That's a supporting role, right? Yeah. So this would have been an actress role because she is in every scene of this movie. I mean, this movie is, it's all about Tilda Swinton's character.
Damn, I'm so annoyed I didn't see that before this. Oh, crap, I keep forgetting that.
All right, so what else you got for us, Kelly Wand?
I get confused when movies called Julia and Julie and Julia come out the same year.
And what about all those nines? You got Disney.
Yeah, I know.
The Definite Article one, you got
it's like having two Capote movies in the same year.
Oh, I'm so glad that's never happened. That would have been great.
Poor Toby Jones.
Did either of you see Julie and Julia?
No.
All right.
Tom's cat did.
Did the cat? Okay.
The cat loved it. It had food.
It's his favorite. Okay, good. You didn't either, I take it. And that's why.
No, he saw it. Dingus saw it.
Yeah, I saw it. We I got a bunch of just a handful of you know, SAG, the Screen Actors Guild sends out screeners to influence your voting on the meaningless Screen Actors Guild awards, and they sent out a bunch after I had already sent my ballot in, and I think that happened to a lot. They sent their movies out really late, which was weird. But Julie and Julia was one of the films they sent out. They also sent out Inglourious Bastards, which was odd, and Precious. But I didn't bother to watch Precious. I did watch Julie and Julia because I can't not watch Meryl Streep. She's my favorite actor. Hmm. Moving on.
I agree with you, except for not watching whatever we're talking about. All right.
That was like 5 seconds ago.
Best actor in a leading role. Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart, which none of us saw. It's supposed to be great. George Clooney in Up in the Air. Colin Firth. Sorry about that, Colin Firth. In A Single Man's. Morgan Freeman in Invictus and Jeremy Renner in The Hurt Locker.
All right, Dingus, who got left out?
Well, I think you both know who got left out.
Yes, we do. Well, we know who you think got left out.
I would think so.
What did he say?
Sam Worthington.
Twice.
For Terminator Salvation, Kelly Wand, or
yes.
For Avatar? Because that's
his collected body of blockbuster.
I see.
Including Clash of the Titans.
So, Dingus, you missed Sam Rockwell being in there, and I agree. He should have been in there. My pick for the year would have been James Nesbitt in 5 Minutes of Heaven. What he did in that movie. I mean, it's so catered to what he's good at, and he pushed it so hard, in a good way. And I loved his arc in that movie.
I think it would have been Michael Stuhlbarg.
Yeah.
Yep.
This was a tough category for me because there's a lot of performances here. I also missed Charlotte Copley, who I really liked.
Yep.
And I considered, James Nesbitt, but I kind of think of Liam Neeson and James Nesbitt as sort of two heads of the same. It's not like they're playing the same part, but those guys are so linked to me. It's not like an ensemble, but it's close. And
well, one of the, you say that, Dingus, but do you remember they almost never interact?
No, it's not that. It's just that the culmination of those two performances make that film for me.
Right.
And I can't weigh one over the other.
Yeah, and that's fair. That's fair too, because I was almost thinking, you know, because Liam Neeson, you know, they both deserve some kind of recognition. But for me personally, because the Tom Chick Academy only has one award to give out, I had to go with James Nesbitt. But yeah, I agree with you. It's almost a two-headed beast, isn't it?
I also really loved Paul Rudd in I Love You, Man. It's not the same kind of performance as these other things, but I love what he did in that movie. And I think one of the reasons why this category is so difficult for me is that I was just so pleased that Jeremy Renner was nominated. I can't tell you how happy I am that dude was nominated. Of the five guys, however, even though I'm very pleased with Jeremy Renner, of the five guys, I would have to give it to Colin Firth.
Hmm. Yep, I'm with you there.
Why wasn't Michael Stuhlbarg nominated again?
Nobody knows who he is.
Hmm. Okay.
I mean, you can't take a guy who's, you know, it's sort of.
Who's in the best debut. Picture of the year.
Well, his debut performance. I mean, that he's an unknown.
The chick from Precious?
Don't get me started
based on
about
a novel
the whole...
push by Sapphire. Okay.
Well, I think this is a function of the type of the amount of roles and really good parts that are available for men and for women. I had a hard time thinking of best actresses, but best actor I have more than enough. You know, even Viggo Mortensen in a film that we didn't care for, I thought was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I would cross off Jeff Bridges, George Clooney, and Morgan Freeman and put three guys in their place.
You didn't even take Crazy Hearts.
Even though I haven't seen Crazy's Hearts, I would still knock it off because I haven't seen Crazy's Hearts.
Ah, okay.
And I would put Michael Stuhlbarg or Charlotte Copley and Sam Rockwell, obviously, in their place. And I can't do that with Best Actress. And that's not because they're, because women aren't as good as men. It's that I don't think there are as many, or we're not as exposed to, certainly, as many really great female performances.
At least like to be.
Yeah.
We done? Oh.
Best picture.
Best picture of the year.
As we drag our feet.
Period. Yeah, we hate to be, we hate to have this over with so soon. The Blind Side, nominees to be determined. The Hurt Locker, nominees to be determined. District 9, and Education, and Glorious Bastards. This whole 10 nominee thing's really a trip, huh, guys?
It's moronic.
Yeah, they're doing it. It's a ratings ploy. But anyway, and even though it takes just two more seconds to say all these, although I'm dragging it out to like 9 minutes. Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, A Serious Man, Up in the Air, and Sherlock Holmes. I mean, Avatar, sorry. Wrong list. And go. Deserve to win?
Well, I think,
not on it.
Yeah. I think Hurt Locker deserves to win.
Yeah, so you guys mentioned it being 10 being moronic, and I agree. You know, when you have so many, it's just going to split up any support for a smaller movie.
Right.
So the biggest movie is going to win, and I just hate that Avatar is going to be the best picture of the year according to the Academy.
Why are you having 10 nominees for one thing and everything else is 5?
Well, it's like you're saying. I mean, I didn't think of it that way,
so
but
arbitrary.
It's a ratings ploy, right? You know, get more people in there. You know, get more. Have a bigger tent.
But you can't pretend it's a more artistic way to do things.
Well, you know what? The smaller movies that wouldn't have otherwise gotten nominated, I'm sure, are tickled. And I'm glad they're happy. And some of them get a limited re-release, and that's good. But it just means the end result is that Avatar is going to end up being the best picture of the year.
No. You think that? Is that favored?
No.
You don't think so? What do you think will happen, Dingus? I think that's how
Hurt
it's going to turn out.
Really?
Because the Hurt Locker is going to have a smaller base of support that's going to be pulled away by people who are gunning for some of those other 10 movies, or you know, 8 when you take away Hurt Locker and Avatar. I think it's going to fragment support for something like Hurt Locker, and therefore something bigger like Avatar, which is the you know, sort of brain dead. I don't mean to be.
No one wants to hear him give another speech.
I certainly don't. But I think that's what's going to happen when you put 10 movies, it fractures support for the smaller ones like Hurt Locker.
I'll bet you $5 Avatar doesn't win Best Picture.
Oh well, I don't want. I mean, I would love to be wrong. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. That would be awesome. I would love for Catherine Bigelow's movie to get it. But I can just see something like her getting Best Director and then Avatar getting Best Picture. I can just see that being how it shakes out. I don't know. I mean, you know what, Dingus, you're
What's
the...
What's that based on?
Well, Dingus, you're the... Based
you're
going
to include 5 extra nominees and you're still going to give it to Avatar?
Based on my cynicism. Dingus, you're the one who knows the most, I think, about the Academy Awards and follows how it shakes out. Like, what do you think is going to happen? You think Hurt Locker, really?
I'm a little prejudiced because I hope it wins, so that's not really fair. I can't imagine Avatar winning. You know, I'm looking at this list of 10 films, and I'm understanding what you're saying about it being fragmented for smaller films, but I think the same contingent likes Avatar as likes Up in the Air and Up, and I don't see that many people who like Hurt Locker being fragmented to other movies other than Inglourious Basterds.
Precious?
So I think Hurt Locker is its own film. And what I'm interested actually in asking you both, if you're interested in answering this question, is if there were only 5 nominees this year, what would have been the 5 nominees? Mm. What do you think?
So this isn't talking about the Tom Chick Academy anymore. This is
imagining that the Academy hadn't lost its mind and decided.
Oh, like what are the 5 that made it in under this clause? I don't know. That's a good question.
Exactly. I'm wondering what those 5 are.
Obviously, in Education, don't you think an Education wouldn't have stood a chance? Up would have been overlooked because it got their animated nod.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. The Academy doesn't really like Quentin Tarantino that much, does it? Doesn't he tend to sort of be shoved into a little corner.
They like him because it makes them seem edgy. They've given him they've given him awards, and he got up there and talked about
taking. They just want to make sure he doesn't win, so they don't have to listen to him win.
Well, he has won, so I mean, and this is a movie about movies.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think Up in the Air definitely gets nominated. It was talked about all year as being nominated. So definitely Up in the Air. I think A Serious Man has a shot because the Coen brothers are winners and people see them as serious filmmakers. I think Hurt Locker has a chance to be nominated. I think Avatar.
For Ben, you mean?
Well, I'm just thinking of the five.
Right. I think Hurt Locker definitely. I mean, once all the support started rolling in from the DGA victory, and I think Hurt Locker definitely is one that would have made it in. Like, I don't see that as one of the lucky ones.
Right. I think District 9 is a lucky one.
Yeah.
I think An Education is a lucky one, and I think Precious is a lucky one, and Up. So I think those four you can just scratch off if there were only five. I'm not sure what the other one is.
Oh, man, if Avatar wins Best Picture.
It's not going to win Best Picture. I just
Tom sounds sure. And Tom.
Well, but Dingus, you agree with me about the. I mean, it's not out of instinct. It's more out of just how people work.
That just means whatever made the most money wins.
Yeah, basically.
What won last year? What was last year's Best Picture?
No Country for Old Men?
No. That was year before.
That was 2 years ago.
Titanic?
Stop that.
I don't know. I can't remember these things. I don't
care. Something I didn't see. All right, talk
all of a sudden, I forget.
Dingus, you're the one. You're the Academy historian here. You should know this.
I thought it was a music. That's why I didn't care. That's why I instantly.
But the thing is, I mean, I just think that's going to be the fallout of what happens when you have so many nominees and people, you know, the dark horses just, they splinter the base, and so it's whatever the brain did.
It's like an election.
Exactly. It's how parliaments work, and now the Academy
Avatar, works
the same way as some third world parliament.
They both use global warming and advertising to trick you.
Last year wasn't The Departed. Let the Right One In was my favorite film. What won last year?
I'm looking. Hang on. This is pretty embarrassing. Maybe when we know, we'll go, all right.
It's not embarrassing. It's indicative of what this whole exercise is about.
Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, good Lord.
Remember?
That movie was from 4 years ago, wasn't it? I don't think that came out.
I didn't see it. Because it was about a game show, and I was like, meh.
Spoiler.
Well, that does sort of bolster your contention, Tom. I mean, Avatar probably made people feel the best, although Blindside made people feel really good. I have no doubt Sandra Bullock will win Best Actress. So a month from now, we'll be talking about Sandra Bullock Best Actress. But I can't imagine – you know,
okay, I
the
hope
one
you're right.
Who likes Avatar, but I right. just can't imagine it winning.
Well, you'll be – of the three of us, Dingus, you'll be the one least bummed out when it wins. So you have that to look forward to.
I'll be devastated when it wins.
I'll be crushed. You'll be devastated. Dingus will be meh.
No, I'm bummed that the best film of the year wasn't even nominated. So there's no way for me not to be.
So it's going to be – it'll be considered an upset if Avatar doesn't win Best Picture. That'll be – oh, wow. Hurt Locker, wow, that little engine that could really knows.
I mean, I really think that's how Catherine Bigelow will get Best Director and Avatar will get Best Picture. I mean, I have no authority on this, but that just seems to me like with the way it's going to work with the number of nominees and the politics of the Academy and the fact that they're just a bunch of people out of touch, that's just what I think is how it's going to shake out. And I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're high.
I think the opposite is going to happen. That's what I'm going to say.
I think there's going to be an Avatar backlash. But wait, did you guys vote on this?
No, that's we're not the Academy. SAG is not the Academy.
I don't know.
All right, well, there we go. So that was our Academy Award episode. We'll be back next year.
So this podcast will be out of date within a month.
Yeah, this isn't one for the archive so much. Yeah, we're just a little something.
And we rushed it out to make sure.
And when are the actual Academy Awards? Who knows this?
They're March 7th.
Good Lord, that's like over a month away.
I know, isn't that weird? That's why I wondered why you wanted to do this immediately. Oh, well.
We're not doing one that night.
I'm done with the Academy after this. I've handed out the awards from the Tom Chick Academy.
If Avatar wins Best Picture, I'm resigning from the Tom Chick Academy.
You weren't in it anyway. You know, he can resign from the Tom Chick Academy because he wasn't even in it. I'm the only member.
Ah, nicely done.
You weren't even allowed in, Kelly Wand. You were a hanger-on. We just let you hang around at the meetings because, you know, we like you, and you're a friend of ours, but you're not a member of the Tom Chick Academy.
No one else is up this late. That's why I get invited.
Exactly. All right, so there's that. You know, watch the Academy Awards on March 2nd, 7th, whenever.
Seven.
Now we're plugging the Oscars?
Yeah, they're the sponsor for the podcast.
Only one person on this podcast is going to be watching it, but go ahead and watch them.
Now, Dingus, every year you also have an entry for the best thing of the year. Do you have any early indication of what some of these are?
My best miscellaneous thingy?
Yeah. Now, what's the name of this actual award? I want to get it right.
Well, first of all, every year I run my own Oscar contest with, you know, my friends and relatives, about 50 people, just because I got so frustrated with what the Academy actually chooses. I wanted to see what do the people I know, what would they choose? So I run my own contest, and I have a bunch of made up things, and one of them is best miscellaneous thingy.
And do you have any early candidates? Like, give us some teasers. What kind of things are going to be in the Christian Muratowski Oscar pool best miscellaneous thingy of the year? What will we see there?
Some of the early candidates for best miscellaneous thingy is the sudden projectile vomiting on Man.
Paul Rudd projectile vomiting on Jon Favreau.
It was just such a surprise. I loved that.
Yep.
I also loved the rules in Zombieland and the final moment in Vinyan, which creeped me out. And also, just for iconic images, your favorite image of the year from Inglourious Basterds and the static nighttime shot in Paranormal Activity.
Mm. Ah, good. Those are good. Those are good miscellaneous things. I like them. All right. The Tom Chick Academy, by the way, I think might go to Paul Rudd projectile vomiting on Jon Favreau. That I might have to go knock on Paul Rudd's door tomorrow and inform him that he's won. All right, well, join us.
Dr. Manhattan's penis.
That's your favorite thing of the year. Okay, good.
That's something I haven't seen before. And I thought I'd seen all kinds. Honey.
I think you can get that on eBay.
Really?
All right, so join us next year for the 83rd annual Academy Awards. And until then, I am Tom Chick. I am here with Christian Mistinsky? I can't pronounce this. Mistinsky.
It's Bob Murawski to you.
And Kelly Wand.
Oh, Best Picture Avatar.
1, 2, 3, not only you and me, got 180 degrees and I'm caught in between. Counting 1, 2, 3, feet apart and they're free. Getting down with 3 feet, everybody.
That was longer than the Oscars.
Don't worry, Kelly. He'll have you out in